since this is just the pre-show. What do they talk about in the pre-show? Coming up in today's show, we'll be featuring our special guest and co-host, Andrew Ulmer. Andrew, I hope you do a good job. Oh, Steve will love that.
Oh, I'm sure he will. He likes to be credited with that.
Yeah, that's right.
Give Steve the credit. Don't want to have to face any copyright infringement.
That's right. Uh-oh, we could be in trouble, so.
Oh, follow along.
What? We're going to read the Bible today, Andrew?
I don't know. It's a crazy notion.
Go figure.
Yeah, the program's called Let the Bible Speak, and I don't know, reading
that's not like that? That's not like a Android app. Let the Bible Speak, and you click, and
does Siri
is that Olstein that Mr. Bright White Shiny Teeth, Mr. Joel Olstein will come on and tell you things about the Bible so you don't have to read it for yourself.
I guess. There's multiple guys like that. We can spend the whole hour, and I think that'd be a good topic one day down the road. Not to
the whole false teaching
put any topic. Ideas in your head.
Well, that man's gotten pretty wealthy saying things people want to hear.
Well, there's a lot of them, unfortunately. Right. And I could think if you put them all together, they can...
Well, it's well time to get started. This is Let the Bible Speak. Most of the time, it's Scott Mitchell hosting and with at least one guest co-hosting with him.
But we look a little bit different than Scott Mitchell.
Just a little bit, yeah. Not quite as... Well, you're about as tall as he is, at least. You got that going for you.
Yeah,
But where none of us are as handsome as that handsome Scott Mitchell guy is, and we all have to admit that pretty readily.
Okay.
We're just the has-beens, right? The leftovers. But
all right.
And Scott does a great job with the program. There's no question. So, but Scott is actually either on his way or in Indianapolis, some type of Bible study he's going to.
Have safe travels. Hopefully that goes well with you, Scott.
Yeah, exactly. And what we're going to be talking about this morning is we're just titled loosely Lessons from Job. And we'll be looking at the book of Job. And this is something actually I've been looking forward to doing for a while. Because I think there's a lot about Job. There's a lot of lessons we can get from Job. Job is a large book and a complex book. But there's some fundamental lessons that we certainly can learn from Job. But I almost wonder sometimes if it isn't even more fundamental to how we should view our day-to-day faith than maybe we even give it credit for. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. Now, one thing we're going to be doing, a lot of reading today. And no apologies for that. This is, after all, Let the Bible Speak. So this is about God's Word and what God tells us. And so, yeah, we're going to look at it. We're going to study it together. And we're going to talk about it. But we're going to read the Bible. And again, no apologies there. And so now what I mentioned this in the intro online, but one thing we are not planning on doing is we do not plan on spending a lot of time with Job's three friends and a lot of dialogue that goes on between Job and his three friends.
Yeah, I was going to put it in quotations, right? Because I think that's
well, that's the word it uses, but boy, you really wonder, with friends like that, you know, who needs enemies? So they supposedly come to help him, and basically they accuse him of being a scoundrel. And that leads to a long discussion, and we were talking about this. That discussion could make a decent program if you really wanted to break it apart and analyze it and kind of extract what are the lessons from it that we can learn. Because there's a lot of things that kind of sound right on the surface, but ultimately unravel in the end. So, and you get the general sense that a lot of the purpose of Job is to take these false ideas that sound like, they sound good, right? But to kind of unfold those and show, you know what, there's one central tenet to all this that we all need to hold on to, and that's what we'll close with at the end, ultimately. So, now, just a heads up, I think it's a great idea for folks to go ahead and read along once we're reading. And so, Andrew, you'll be reading from the New American Standard Version.
I will.
Yeah, and I'll be reading from the English Standard. Now, some of these initial readings I have, they're actually New King James. Intentionally kind of mixed it up a little bit just because you don't need to be stuck on one particular version. But just a heads up if you're wanting to follow along with us. So let's start by reading a little bit. What I'd like to do is take a step back and look at another like hero or champion of faith that we often think of when we think about faith. And we want to look at Abraham, you know, father of many nations. We look at him as the model of faith. Even though there's times that he didn't do a very good job at that, if you really read his life.
Yep.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually skip ahead to Hebrews chapter 11, and read verses 8 through 19. Now, if you happen to have multiple versions ready, so you can grab one, this is going to be New King James, if you like to follow along. And reading starting at verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. By faith Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore from one man, and him as good as dead, after all he was 100 years old at the time, were born descendants as many as the stars of heaven, and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. These all died in faith. Again, in the context, there's other people mentioned, to be clear. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they have been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return, right? The option was always there to go home. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. Now, so here's a question. Why did we go to a description of Abraham's faith? Well, he's a good example of faith, obviously. I mean, he's almost any discussion of faith, he's an important figure to turn to and look at. But there's a different reason, actually, I wanted to talk about Abraham, and that goes back to the dating of Job. Now, we were talking about this earlier. When was Job written, Andrew?
Well, then it depends.
You've got the answer. I know you've got the secret answer. It's buried in your book somewhere. I just know.
Oh, yeah.
You're the one that knows, right?
Oh, yeah. Scholars debated this, and they still haven't come up something. Some people think it was before or during the time of Abraham, sometimes afterwards.
Yeah.
So we just don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
It kind of leans toward the patriarchal period, because at the end of the book of Job, it says that he lives 140 years more. Mm-hmm. And at the time of Moses, really 120 years was max. A person was to live. And so there is this idea of he lived to be about 200.
Right, right.
And so we're kind
which
of...
Which is something you see post, in the early... post-flood period, right? Mm-hmm. You actually see still continued long lifespans, but over time that kind of tapers off. Now, there's actually some theories that talk about why that might be, but that's for a different discussion.
Yeah, and so he...
But that would point to a very early date. Yeah,
and Abraham lived to be in the 180s, I think like 185, 187, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
I've looked that up, but I think it's probably around that time, maybe, we just don't know.
Yeah.
And we don't know where us came from, too. I didn't want to steal your thunder if that's what you're going to talk about next.
No.
Because we're not for sure exactly where us is, U-Z, where it talks about
us is.
In verse us is. But, yeah.
No pun intended.
Yeah, but it might be in various areas, not exactly in Israel itself, but like in the Arabian Peninsula or in present-day Syria, we just don't know. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think to that point, I think if you think about it, it's easy to gloss over this, but, you know, there was Abraham and his descendants and the 12 tribes and his 12 sons, and that all occurred prior to 400 years of oppression in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, Job living... during the time of that 400 years could kind of make sense, right? There's a period, maybe that's a period in there. But But there's reason to believe it may even predate Abraham. And one of the reasons I wanted to go there with the story of Abraham, and we do not know this. This is why I want to be clear about this. We do not know. But it's actually even possible that Job's story was recorded, inspired, and captured prior to Abraham. He could be, have been a contemporary to Abraham. He could have lived prior to Abraham. And perhaps through inspiration, Job may be, and there's people that argue, Job may be the earliest writing we have for God. And it may be that the story of Job was part of the foundation that gave Abraham faith. That he looked at the story of Job and looked at its lessons, and that was part of, that could have been part of what encouraged Abraham to faith, have the faith that he had, that we then, that then become the foundation of the Hebrew nation, and ultimately through whom the Christ comes. And so we don't know. I want to be clear on this. This is speculation because we simply don't know, but it's possible that this was a story that Abraham had studied and could have been one of the things that helped lead to the foundation of faith that he had.
And another thing just made me think, it talks about in the very first chapter that he offers up sacrifices. Mm-hmm. So that would be way before the law of Moses and what God had spoken about, how sacrifices are supposed to be done by the Levitical priest.
Right. I've seen, and I have a deep skepticism about a lot of scholars, frankly, but I think there are scholars who say, well, it was written by an Israelite. I have a hard time placing it in that, in the Mosaic period or the kingdom period, because it doesn't follow any of that format at all.
Yeah.
So it suggests that it's at least pre-Moses, possibly even pre-Abraham, right? So which is what we're alluding to. So.
And some of the language that possibly that it could be pre-Abraham is how God describes Job.
Yeah.
And he said there's none like Job in all the earth.
Yeah, he's definitely the example.
Yeah.
And it also, and a point to be made, it also makes him the target, right?
Yeah.
It makes him a high value target in light of all the other things that were going on at the time. So, okay. So let me ask you a question. And again, I'm reviewing my notes here. Oh, I see what happened. I got ahead of my notes a little bit. Okay, so I'm going to pick on you a little bit, Andrew. So summarize the book of Job.
Well, I don't know if I could summarize that in just a short bit. But hopefully I'll do an adequate job.
You know, 30 seconds. Just high level, 30 seconds.
All right. Well, you have this man who is a very well-off, well-to-do man, known by the people in the area, respected, and he has all kinds of possessions. He is blessed with children, and all of a sudden, there is this scene, which it's one of the difficult scenes to really gauge, Satan and God having a discussion about, I want to test, God, I want to test your servant, Job.
Mm-hmm.
And he's blameless, he's not done anything wrong, and Satan wants to target him and take away his possessions and everything he owns, and therefore he'll curse you, God, if you take away everything that he has.
Yep.
And so everything's wiped out. And his loving, supportive wife.
Yeah, we'll go
and
there.
And his time of need. We'll get there.
Yeah,
we are offers going him there. kind words to live by.
Kind of encourage him.
Yeah, but he does not curse. Actually,
now, there's a wife that when you're down, you want her by your side.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, but he still does not curse God, and he still praises God, and he said, and we'll hopefully talk about the most probably well-known verse in that, "Be God give, God take it away. Naked from the womb I came, naked I will return." So hopefully we'll get to that passage. And then I'm sure the accuser is saying, well, that didn't work, but let me try this. God, okay, the first test failed, but I've got another test. Let me take away his health.
We'll read all that. So you can summarize a little higher.
All right. All right. So, well, good. Anyway, he gets these boils all over his body. He feels probably worse than we can ever imagine. And then he gets a visit from three
quote friends.
Friends. And then there's a dialogue of saying, well, you know what, Job, you must have done something wrong. There must be some sin.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah, you clearly does. God, you know, you don't suffer like this unless you clearly deserve it from God.
And Job says, what have I done?
Yeah.
And show me what I've done.
Yeah.
And he says, I want to
back him in a corner, too, because they just keep pushing and pushing. Well, you're clearly the guilty one. Yeah. There's no way you could suffer like this. This is no coincidence that you have suffered. Yeah. You've gone from such great blessings to this incredible fall unless you've done something.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you've done something wrong.
Yeah.
Or else God wouldn't punish you like this. Now, ironically, the reason that he was suffering like that is because he hadn't done anything wrong, but he doesn't know that. That's the key.
Yeah. But he goes about talking about, well, what have I not done? I've been there for the poor, I've treated my servants well, I have taken care of orphans. So he lists out all the things that he has done, and I want to appeal pretty much what Paul says, appeal to Caesar, but I want to appeal to God.
Yeah.
take my case before a higher authority.
And we have a saying that we use sometimes, be careful what you ask for because you just might get it.
Yeah, and eventually...
That's a big setup right there, yeah.
Eventually, after the friends get tired of, they're not going to get anywhere with Job, then he has another friend who kind of...
He's a little harder to categorize.
Elihu. Some say that maybe he was there as a preparation to meet God.
Maybe he's bridging.
Yeah,
maybe he's trying to get the whole dialogue a little closer to where it needs to go.
Yeah, maybe the mediator, to speak. But he says some good things and some questionable things.
Yeah, I think in some ways he's arguably closer to where the discussion needs to go, but still not quite there.
But
I think in the end they get the answer they need from the best possible authority.
And then eventually God speaks up, and which he didn't have to, but. It's a good characteristic. Okay, who are you to question me?
Right. Oh, yeah.
And it just made me think about the whole scenario of the potter versus the clay.
Oh, yeah. And
the potter, doesn't he have the right to do whatever he wants with the clay? We're like the clay.
Yeah.
Job is like the clay.
Exactly.
God is the potter.
Exactly.
And God created everything. He gives this multi-chapter discourse of... This is what I've done. Explain to me, where do you fit in all this? Can you explain
how the
stars were put into place, how the heavens were created?
Exactly.
And then Joseph says, you know, I'm going to cover my hand, put my hand on my mouth.
Right.
I can't say anything.
And so just to bring that back to the point I'd made earlier, so all of this... Job is a big book. There's a lot of material. There's a lot of very elegant speaking in there. And a lot of it is stuff that you can really meditate on. This type of story, inspired story, could have been helpful to any person of faith. And it could have been available to the patriarchs, specifically Abraham, to study and meditate upon and kind of help them in their day-to-day walk, you know, face the challenges that they face and have faith in God for that heavenly home, that city that's unseen, like we read about in Hebrews. And so just kind of wanted to kind of capture the overarching story because we're going to cut out quite a bit of the middle. The dialogue between the three plus one friends, if you will, gets pretty detailed. We don't even begin to have time, but we definitely want to have, I really don't want to go over an hour if we can. And if we come up short, that's fine too, because we just want to get through the lesson. But we do want to spend quite a bit of time reading this morning. If you don't mind, Andrew, would you go ahead and get us started? I know you've been talking for a bit, but kind of...
Oh, and if I could just add one real brief thing.
Sure, go for it.
It ends on hope and blessing. And so there is hope at the end.
Yep, there's hope at the end. Okay. All right. You want to go ahead and read the first chapter? We're going to be doing a lot of reading. So we got some jelly beans here to wet our whistle, and along with some water, because we are going to be doing a lot of reading this morning. So.
And hopefully you have your Bibles open to Job chapter 1.
Chapter 1. Yeah, you're starting with New American Standard.
That is correct. Mm. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was blameless, upright, fearing God, and turning away from evil.
Mm-hmm.
7 sons and 3 daughters were born to him. His possessions also were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and very many servants. And that man was the greatest of all the men of the East. His sons used to go and hold a feast in the house of each one on his day. And they would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. When the days of feasting had completed their cycle, Job would send and consecrate them, rising up early in the morning and offering burnt offerings according to the number of them all. Mm-hmm. For Job said, "Perhaps my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus Job did continually. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. The Lord said to Satan, "From where do you come?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "From roaming about on the earth and walking around on it." The Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil." Then Satan answered the Lord, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge about him and his house and all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. Put forth your hand now and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has is in your power, only you do not put forth your hand on him." So Satan departed from the presence of the Lord. Now on the day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, a messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them, and the Sabaeans attacked and took them. They also slew the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "The Chaldeans formed 3 bands and made a raid on the camels and took them and slew the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another also came and said, "Your sons and your daughters were eating and drinking wine in their older brother's house. And behold, a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the 4 corners of the house, and it fell on the young people and they died, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Then Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head and fell to the ground and worshiped. He said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Through all this, Job did not sin, nor did he blame God.
So let me ask you this, Andrew. So all these misfortunes, coincidence?
No.
Definitely not coincidence. In fact, I mean, for example, you know, a great wind came across and destroyed their home. I mean, and people are slaughtered, but one person survives to tell the story of woe. And they all basically line up at his door at the same time to say, "This is the misfortune that has fallen upon you." Okay. So, yeah, let's face it. This is not a minor inconvenience, right? And this is certainly not a coincidence. Clearly, there's something beyond the normal fate of man going on here.
And it gets worse and worse. Each message is worse.
As if that was not bad enough, your family's destroyed, right?
Yeah.
You know? So one thing to keep in mind later, too, is all of this misfortune, up to this point, is fallen on him and his wife, right? This is their children. This is their estate. This is their wealth. They're both suffering equally at this point. So I'm going to go ahead and look at chapter 2. Again, there was a day when the sons of God, and by the way, this is the English Standard Version. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, where have you been? Or from where have you come, I should say. Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro on the earth and from walking up and down on it. And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil? He still holds fast his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without reason. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin, all that a man has he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse you to your face. Well, that's quite a challenge. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, he is in your hand, only spare his life. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with loathsome sores from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took a piece of broken pottery from which to scrape himself while he sat in the ashes. When his wife said to him, do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die. But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women would speak. Shall we receive good from God, and shall we not receive evil? And all this Job did not sin with his lips. Now, do you think some marriage counseling would help these two?
Well, that's the only word to get one sentence from the wife. Right,
the one thing that she's known for, her one line. She's got one line to deliver. And what is it? Curse God and die.
Mm-hmm.
You think, you know, if you're out there thinking, yeah, my marriage isn't what it used to be, I don't know, let's hope you're not to that point, right?
Well, we can speculate about how
curse
she...
God and die. It's hard to imagine a worse piece of advice you could possibly give a person.
And you could speculate she might be so distraught. She's lost all of her wealth too, and what she's been used to living as.
Yeah.
And she's lost all of her children too. They would no longer be the people to look to.
So
it can be a number of things to kind of be the devil's advocate, which I don't want to be the devil advocate on her side.
We use that very loosely. And to be fair, she hasn't experienced the physical ailments, but she's experienced all the other loss.
The emotional distress.
Right. So, she's at the point of despair. And let's face it, we can be there. So we want to be sympathetic too, but it's just... It just stands out as not good marital advice, right?
Well, they can't. There's no supporting one another.
Yeah, there's absolutely no. Yeah, there's exactly.
She's lacking her faith.
Well, they say things like, you know, I've heard so many men say, behind a great man is a great woman. Well, Joe doesn't have that. You know, he's at the lowest point. He's got nobody. His wife certainly isn't helping him, right? Yeah. Now, I do want to focus on one thing, and I'm glad you brought this up earlier too, because Job himself, again, this is the ESV translation. Shall we receive good from God, and shall we not receive evil? Now, how many times when you read this do you want to go, hey, Job, remember what you said? Yeah, that's it, right? You had it right. You know, back when, you know, you weren't, before these three friends came to help him, you know, you were willing to just be content with what God provided because, hey, God can provide good and provide evil, and let's accept both. So, well, since that's pretty much the lesson here from Job, I appreciate you coming on. It's been a short show, so
right.
I think we can wrap it up. And thankfully, you don't live too far, so you didn't have to drive too far for the show. So,
hope you enjoyed this program.
I think since we got the gist of the lesson here, I guess we probably can we wrap it up.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot more chapters in here, though. You think there's more to learn here?
Yeah, maybe a thing or two.
A thing or two. Okay. Well, let's continue on then. Let's see. Oh, here we go. Here's our favorite guys. We love these guys, okay? Now, when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that had come upon him, they came each from his own place, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. They made an appointment together to come to show him sympathy and comfort him. He gets a lot of sympathy and comfort in this book, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
It's starting with his wife, of course.
Yeah.
And when they saw him from a distance, they did not recognize him. And they raised their voice and wept, and they tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their heads towards heaven. And they sat with him on the ground 7 days and seven nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his suffering was very great. Okay. So you almost get the impression, honestly, and again, we're not going to spend the many chapters on this long discussion they have. You almost get the impression Job was doing fine until they came to help him, right? So they came and basically, instead of helping him, they basically said, boy, you really messed up, right? You clearly messed up to deserve this, because there's no question this is not normal, the normal way of man. Something definitely has befallen. And they're saying, well, you know, God must be punishing you for something wrong you did, right? And it makes sense, right? But let's talk a little bit about the levels of despair, really, that Job has fallen. Can we go ahead and read? You want to go ahead and read, Andrew? Because my voice is actually getting a little hoarse. On chapter 3. Again, right. You'll be reading from the New American Standard. So,
if I could just make one quick comment.
Please do.
Yeah. I was just thinking that it appears that you can kind of insinuate that the wife and the children don't possess the faith or righteousness of Job, obviously. And I just thought that that was very interesting, and I don't know, might get more involved with that. But that's a deeper discussion too, and I think an important point of what he had to do for his children, and what great care he had for his children.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think that's definitely worth noting. The care he demonstrated for his own family and his children to make sure that they were right before God, and do anything he could to kind of help in that regard.
And so. and how he responded to his wife too, trying to direct her.
Yeah,
in the same way.
Yeah.
To even though he was downcast, he was trying to teach her a lesson.
Well, that's true. I mean, he did kind of try to push her in the right way and say, "Honey, that's you don't want to go there."
So I just didn't want to soundtrack too much from our reading,
but that is some great points.
All right. Starting in verse 1 of chapter 3.
Mm-hmm.
Afterward, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. And Job said, "Let the day perish on which I was to be born, and the night which said, a boy is conceived.
Mm-hmm.
May that day be darkness. Let not God above care for it, nor light shine on it. Let darkness and black gloom claim it. Let a cloud settle on it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it. As for that night, let darkness seize it. Let it not rejoice among the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of the months. Behold, let that night be barren. Let no joyful shout enter it. Let those curse it who curse that day, who are prepared to rouse Leviathan. Let the stars of its twilight be darkened. Let it wave for light, but have none. And let it not see the breaking dawn, because it did not shut the opening of my mother's womb or hide trouble from my eyes. Why did I not die at birth, come forth from the womb and expire? Why did the knees receive me, and why the breast that I should suck? For now I would have lain down and been quiet. I would have slept then. I would have been at rest with kings and with counselors of the earth, who rebuilt ruins for themselves, or with princes who had gold, who were filling their houses with silver. Or like a miscarriage which is discarded, I would not be, as infants that never saw light. There the wicked cease from raging, and there the weary are at rest. The prisoners are at ease together. They do not hear the voice of the taskmaster. The small and the great are there, and the slave is free from his master. Why is light given to him who suffers, and life to the bitter of soul, who long for death, but there is none, and dig for it more than for hidden treasures, who rejoice greatly and exult when they find the grave? Why is light given to man whose way is hidden, and whom God has hedged in? For my groaning comes at the sight of my food, and my cries pour out like water. For what I fear comes upon me, and what I dread befalls me. I am not at ease, nor I am quiet, and I am not at rest, but turmoil comes."
So I wanted to read this chapter because I think it's important in the overall story to understand he's not just coasting through this, right? Even though he's holding fast to his integrity, and he's not taking his wife's foolish advice, he's not going to curse God and die. He's going to try to endure it. The depths of his despair are very real. Very real. And I think if we don't understand that his if we don't understand that aspect, I think we're missing something important. It's easy to look at his good example and take courage from it, but also ultimately, he gets a little bit of a slap down as well, right? Because he starts asking questions. But I think when we look at the story, we have to understand how deep his despair is, right? And so it is fair to say, no matter how bad things are, have you reached Job's level, right? Could you do as well as Job did under those circumstances? I don't think I could. I won't lie to you. I don't think there's any way I could. I'd like to think I could. I'd like to think I could look at his example and go, oh, okay. Well, if a modern day equivalent happened to me, I'd stay strong. I would look at Job's example and say, nope. But I'm not sure I could. I can't honestly say I could, because this is not only such a low level in his life, a point of despair, but it's clearly not an accident. This didn't just accidentally happen. So it would beg the obvious question, why? After all his faithfulness to God, his enduring these initial sufferings, ironically, the one thing he couldn't stand is his friends helping him. It's kind of funny how that works. But up until the point where the friends show up, I mean, his example is pristine. I mean, you couldn't imagine his response to such adversity being any better. And yet what then ensues in the next following chapters are essentially his so-called friends just look at him and go, you've done something wrong. Why don't you just confess what you did? I don't know what you did, but clearly this was a facade. Everybody thought you were a godly person, but you have obviously done something very, very wrong. And so there's these chapters where they have these long arguments and Job defends himself and he tries to defend God and say, hey, it's, you know, whatever, God still reigns. And they go round and around, and finally, and I wouldn't say I would do any better than this, finally he wants the answer to the obvious question, why am I suffering like this?
I think the ultimate question that we relate to today is, a lot of people question this, is why do bad things happen to good people?
Right. And that's the whole center story of this. Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Good thing I didn't mean to...
Right.
I meant to cut in. Let me say that.
No, you're fine. And the thing that we know, because we know the first couple chapters, is we know he's suffering not because he did something bad, because he was so good. It made him a target, right, in this particular scenario. Now, I don't want to extrapolate and say, well, that's what happens to us today, because I don't know, right? Talking about how... Satan can tempt us, or just how sin in general can tempt us and temptation works, was actually a topic of a previous program, and I encourage folks to go check that out. Scott Louis Taylor, who you know so well, had a show on that, and it's a good show. I definitely recommend it. But so what we like to do is we want to fast forward. So we lay kind of the foundation, and we mentioned there's this dialogue with these three friends, and then at some point there's this fourth friend, we'll say, there's a younger man who just is completely absent from the story for several chapters. But towards the end, he kind of shows up and he says, I almost wonder, this is a debate that folks have, is his conversation kind of bridging between where they've been and where they need to go in the end, right? Because he comes in and he points out some of the fallacies of the argument, but his own argument has some weaknesses as well. But he is at least moving the whole conversation in a better direction than it's been going. And he admits, he's like, look, and this was common in the culture, you guys are older, you're wiser, you're respected, I'm a young man. I kept my quiet because I respect my elders, but you guys are talking like a bunch of fools. You guys need to answer these questions. Like, I can't take this anymore. I've got to say something. But here's one thing I really want to share, because I think sometimes when we go and we jump into Job, we go straight to chapter, for good reasons, a lot of good reasons, we go straight to chapter 38 and read from there. Uh-huh. And I love reading 38, 39, and 40. I may even hog those. I may not even share them with you, because I love reading these chapters where God comes in.
By all means.
my throat may not keep up. So I went an entire winter, didn't catch any cold, not once. Went to Paris, came back, jet lag. Didn't get sick. I went to Indiana shortly afterwards, came down with a cold, and I've had two colds now in the spring, but none in the winter, so it's funny how that works. But
well, we hope you, if you live in Indiana, we want you to be watching this. You know what I'm blaming?
Yeah.
We don't blame Indiana for Theron's cold.
I just think it's ironic. I can go half a world away and come home all jet-lagged and everything else, and I don't get sick.
Yeah.
But I go visit family in Indiana, then I get sick. I just think it's ironic, mm-hmm. right? I cross the Ohio River, you know. I just think that's funny. That's all that is. So, nothing against Indiana. I love Indiana, actually. I consider myself more an Indiana person than anything else. So, no, pardon me. But what I want to do for the reading is I actually want to go back a little further back than we typically do. And I want to go back to chapter 37 and starting in verse 14. And this is actually kind of the end of Elihu's conversation where he's, you know, he's become, he kind of fills that space. He gets the floor and he keeps it, you know, for a period of time. And again, I think to some extent he is kind of setting the foundation for God to actually come in and answer Job's question. And we'll say, answer Job's question in quotes, because we need to get to that. But starting in verse 14, this is again Elihu. Hear this, O Job, stop and consider the wondrous works of God. Do you know how God lays his command upon them and causes the lightning of his cloud to shine? Do you know the balancing of the clouds, the wondrous works of him who is perfect in knowledge? You whose garments are hot when the earth is still because of the south wind. Basically, so you can't even cool yourself off, right? Now we have air conditioning, but anyway. Can you, like him, spread out the skies hard as a cast metal mirror? Teach us what we shall say to him. We cannot draw up our case because of darkness. Shall it be told him that I would speak? Did a man ever wish that he would be swallowed up? He's saying, you really want to talk? You really want to challenge God? Are you serious? Now, one of the reasons I say this, that this is almost a precursor to what comes, is he's saying some of the same things that God's getting ready to say too, right? Now no one looks on the light when it is bright in the skies, when the wind has passed and cleared them. Out of the north comes golden splendor. God is clothed with awesome majesty. The Almighty, we cannot find him. He is great in power, justice, and abundant righteousness. He will not violate. Therefore, men fear him. He does not regard any who are wise in their own conceit. Now, here's something that's kind of interesting. In the whole course of this long discourse, when we get to things like, out of the north comes golden splendor. God is clothed with awesome majesty. Now, we very easily read that and go, wow, this is part of that poetic language. But he's literally saying, God is coming with golden splendor from the north because of what happens in verse 30, in chapter 38, right? Mm-hmm. It's easy to miss that this is not poetic. He's actually being literal in this case, because the very beginning of chapter 38 begins with, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said. Now, Job's been saying, he's getting to the point where, I want God to tell me what I did wrong. Why am I suffering like this? Why, God? Ultimately, he gets to that point. And guess what? He gets an answer. Does he get the answer he expects?
No.
Do we have those first two chapters revealed to Job? We'll find out. And God, and this is something when you do reading, that it's like when God speaks, especially when God speaks in the way that he's speaking to Job, he's making a point that I'm God. It's hard not to use the big voice because this is God speaking. So forgive me, I tend to get possessed by the big voice when I read this because it's so weighty. But who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Dress for action, or gird up your loins, I think is the actual phrase here. Uh-huh. Like a man, I will question you, and you will make it known to me. Like, okay, you want to go one toe-to-toe with God? We can go there. Mm-hmm. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Because after all, you were there, right? Because you're up there with God. Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst out from the womb? When I made clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band. and prescribed limits for it and set bars and doors and said, thus far shall you come and no farther. And here shall your proud waves be stayed. Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place, that it may take hold of the skirts of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it? It is changed like clay under the seal, and its features stand out like a garment. From the wicked, their light is withheld, and their uplifted arm is broken. Have you entered into the springs of the sea and walked in the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been revealed to you? Or have you seen the gates of deep darkness? Have you comprehended the expanse of the earth? Declare if you know all this. Again, who are you again? Where is the way to the dwelling of light? And where is the place of darkness, that you may take it to its territory, and that you may discern the paths to his home, to its home? You know, for you were born then, and the number of your days is great. Have you entered the storehouses of the snow, or have you seen the storehouses of the hail, which I have reserved for the time of trouble, for the day of battle and war? What is the way to the place where the light is distributed, or where the east wind is scattered upon the earth? Who has cleft a channel for the torrents of rain and a way for the thunderbolt to bring rain on a land where no man is, and the desert in which there is no man, to satisfy the waste and desolate land and to make the ground sprout with grass? Has the rain a father, or who has begotten the drops of dew? From whose womb did the ice come from, or who has given birth to the frost of heaven? The waters became hard like stone, and the face of the deep is frozen. Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades, or loose the cords of Orion? Can you lead forth the Maseroth in their season, or can you guide the bear with its children? These are all constellations, by the way. Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you establish their rule on the earth? Can you lift up your voice to the clouds, that a flood of waters may cover you? Can you send forth lightning, that they may go and say to you, here we are? Who has put wisdom in the inward parts, or given understanding to the mind? Who can number the clouds by wisdom, or who can tilt the waterskins of the heavens when the dust runs into a mass and the clods stick fast together? Can you hunt the prey for the lion, or satisfy the appetite of the young lions when they crouch in their dens or lie in wait in their thicket? Who provides for the raven its prey when its young ones cry to God for help and wander about for lack of food? Now, this is just the start of God saying, who are you again? Right?
Yeah, and I just, I'd like that, tell me if you know all this. The verse of 18, boy, would I feel already small.
Yeah. And you feel about all these
questions,
point?
and then now, as you indicate, he's just getting started, and he's got some more chapters of questions and interrogation.
Well, and if I could use the word beat down, this is quite a beat down. It's like, I think the simple fact that Job didn't vanish into dust is says something right there, right? Because,
or can I go to my room now?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, I think I'm good. Are we done yet? Have you ever been punished for something and wondered, will this punishment ever end?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've had that moment. You want to go ahead and take 39?
Sure.
And just for time, we may have to truncate just a little bit too, but go ahead and take 39 if you will.
Do you know the time the mountain goats give birth? Do you observe the calving of the deer? Can you count the months they fulfill, or do you know the time they give birth? They kneel down, they bring forth their young, they get rid of their labor pains. Their offspring become strong, they grow up in the open field, they leave and do not return to them. Who sent out the wild donkey free, and who loosed the bonds of the swift donkey? To whom I gave the wilderness for a home, and the salt land for his dwelling place? He scorns the tumult of the city, the shoutings of the driver he does not hear. He explores the mountains for his pasture and searches after every green thing. Will the wild ox consent to serve you, or will he spend the night at your manger? Can you bind the wild ox in a furrow with ropes, or will he harrow the valleys after you? Will you trust him because his strength is great and leave your labor to him? Will you have faith in him that he will return your grain and gather it from your threshing floor? The ostrich's wings flap joyously with the pinion and the plumage of love, for she abandons her eggs to the earth and warms them in the dust. and she forgets that a foot may crush them, or that a wild beast may trample them. She treats her young cruelly, as if they were not hers. Though her labor be in vain, she is unconcerned, because God has made her forget wisdom, and has not given her a share of understanding. When she lifts herself on high, she laughs at the horse and his rider. Do you give the horse his might? Do you clothe his neck with a mane? Do you make him leap like a locust? His majestic snorting is terrible. He paws in the valley and rejoices in his strength. He goes out to meet the weapons. He laughs at fear and is not dismayed. He does not turn back from the sword. The quiver rattles against him. The flashing spear and javelin. With shaking rage, he races over the ground. And he does not stand still at the voice of the trumpet. As often as the trumpet sounds, he says, "Aha!" And he scents the battle from afar, and the thunder of the captains and the war cry. Is it by your understanding that the hawk soars, stretching his wings towards the south? Is it at your command that the eagle mounts up and makes his nest on high? On the cliff he dwells and lodges, upon the rocky crag, an accessible place. From there he spies out food. His eyes see it from afar. His young ones also suck up blood. And where the slain are, there he is.
And then just carrying that into the very next chapter, it says, "And the Lord said to Job, shall a fault finder contend with the Almighty? He who argues with God, let him answer it." And just a brief cultural reference here. If you're looking at 19 and 25, I love those passages. They're so poetic. They talk about the mighty war horse and his lust for battle. And it just, I'm trying to remember. It's about Secretariat. I think it may be the name of the movie, but the movie about Secretariat, which is a good movie, like any secular thing. There's some stuff that's not great, but it is a good movie. But it actually opens with an opening scene from a horse race in slow motion, and Secretariat basically blowing away all the other horses and just incredible power. And Secretariat was an amazing horse. And it talks and it reads these verses, and it gives you chills when you listen to it. And God's word can do that. It's inspiring, and it's inspired. I mean, literally inspired, and it'll move you. And so at this point, Job has pretty much had a good beatdown. So he's if at this point he manages to squeak out a few words, and he says in verse 3, chapter 40, "Then Job answered the Lord and said, 'Behold, I am of small account. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand on my mouth. I have spoken once, and I will not answer twice, but I will proceed no further.'" Are we done? Nope. No, we continue on. And I'll tell you, I love reading these chapters. And unfortunately, just for the sake of time, we won't. But if you can, for personal reading, please read these chapters where God talks about, and I'll play my hand here. "I am God, and who are you?" I mean, that's in a nutshell what God is saying. Okay, you want God to answer your challenge? Who are you? I'm God, but who are you? Now, there's a way to take that the wrong way. I think if you understand having the right relationship with God, I think there's comfort in knowing God and his power and putting faith in him. And the answer, the story is not realize how pathetic you are. Now that there's that aspect is certainly there. But the real message is put your faith in God because he's God, right? This goes back to ultimately Job had the right answer. You know, we get good from God. We get bad from God, but he's God. Praise be to God, right? That is the right answer. But in all of this, until his friends show up, he seems to be doing well. Once his friends show up, well, things kind of go downhill. But we can relate to that question, you know, and I've experienced things, and I've had things in my life that I look back and go, why did I have to go through that? I still to this day haven't seen a magic reason why I went through it. I know sometimes we talk about that, but It just felt like suffering that didn't prove anything. It didn't help me. Now, maybe in the big picture someday I'll see it, but Job challenges us to have a faith that says, you know what? I don't know the answer. And maybe on this side of eternity, I can't know the answer. But I know somebody on the other side of eternity that knows all the answers. And so I should put my faith in him at all costs. And I actually want to use Job itself to make a point and actually an application of this. So as studious Bible students, it's natural for us to read the Bible. We know it's inspired from God, and read instances like the first two chapters. Satan goes before God, says, "Yeah, I'm going about my business. I want to go tempt this guy." And so, understandably, we intuitively want to understand, what's this about? What's going on here? Is this a different? Is this an insight into the spiritual realm? Are we supposed to take lessons from it? Maybe. But at the same time, I think one of the things I think we need to understand is, you know, if God didn't, because here's the way Hollywood would write this. Oh, God appears. Oh, let me tell you about this this wager I had. I hate to even use that word, but it kind of almost works. I had this wager with Satan. So you're just kind of playing to this. Play along with me. Hollywood would probably write the story that way. Oh, you know, it's time for the big reveal. Yeah, we had this conversation. You're doing pretty well. Just hang in there, buddy. And then you'll get lots of good stuff back. Just hang in there. God's answer to his suffering is not, let me explain to you. It's, put your faith in me. You don't need all the answers. That's not even relevant. Put your faith in me. That's what's relevant. And so, again, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not saying that looking for answers is wrong, but I'm also saying is the ultimate answer to all those questions is put your faith in God. And I think time and time again, even as mature Christians, we keep encountering, coming back to that answer. And I don't know how many times I've been in this situation, and I finally step back and I look at it and go, you know what? Why didn't I just put my faith in God the first time? Why didn't I just say, you know what? I don't get this. I don't understand, but I'm going to put my faith in God because he's God and I'm not, right? And I think that's the final answer. Now, to kind of wrap this all up, eventually Job kind of gets, I mean, he kind of says, yeah, right, you're God, I'm not. And essentially God kind of even rebukes the three friends and says, you guys need to make amends for all this nonsense you've been saying, right? But you know, the short of the story is God ultimately blesses Job again. Now, do we get a glimpse back? Is Satan, you know, do God and Satan get together sometime and say, let's compare our notes. How did we do? No. No. And I think that tells us something, because that's not the real story. that whole preface was just to stage the important lesson. Again, people can take away different lessons. I'm not trying to knock somebody who looks at this just a little differently. But I will make the argument that I am God and you are not. And what we get from that is have faith in me. In my mind, that's the number one lesson from Job. Now, again, there's lots of lessons there, and maybe there's some nuances there that people can certainly look at. But in my humble opinion, I think that is the fundamental lesson of Job. And here's one of the things that I think in some ways we need to think about that more, because I think that foundation of, you know what, maybe some things in my faith are challenging me. Look at the big picture. You know what? We're going to be challenged in this world. We know that. We've been told that. And we experience that. We understand that. But the biggest question is, God is God. Are you going to trust him? Are you going to put your faith in him? You know, are you going to accept the good and the bad? Like Job initially said, I mean, that is a powerful lesson. Are we going to put our faith in God? And it helps bring perspective to whatever other challenges we're facing, right? So maybe something's going on in your church and it is discouraging. Maybe something bad's happened in your family or marriage. It is discouraging. Maybe you're suffering from physical ailments. It's discouraging. Maybe you're having faith issues. That's discouraging. But in the end, it really does come down to, God is God. Are we going to put our faith in him? So we did hit an hour. I was thinking hopefully we'd go a little shorter, but that's okay. An hour's fine. For the record, CDs hold an hour and 20 minutes. So that's kind of the hard stop, right? It's just, if we can't get it on a CD, then that kind of cuts out a good avenue for sharing the lessons. So any closing thoughts on your side there?
Well, I was just thinking that as far as Job's perspective, I think he came to realize that my feeble mind is not able to grasp fully the awesome power that you have, God.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And
right,
then
right,
that
right,
God right. was pointing out the fact that we as humans will never, in our physical current state, be
right,
able right. to comprehend all that is Him. That He is so great,
exactly
so
right.
majestic, so awesome.
Yeah, yep, yep.
And I don't mean like, hey man, you're an awesome guy.
yeah, or, right, right, right.
But
right, right,
awesome as not in undescribable,
way, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. powerful.
Yeah, the true meaning of awesome.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, yeah. The superlative of
the
awesome.
Omnipotence yeah. that He has.
All the omni words that you can
yes.
think of. Yeah.
So, and just kind of maybe some other passages or illustrations just maybe that correspond or they're like Job is the potter and clay scenario that we can kind of correlate with Job.
Yeah.
God being the potter, we being the clay, that He has the ability and right as the potter to
yeah.
mold and shape us.
Yeah.
And hopefully we are willing to be molded and shaped in the manner that God desires.
Yep.
Because
yep.
I know that He wanted Job to be molded and shaped in the way that God desired for
yep.
him.
Yep, yep. Well, and here's the thing. Here's another way to think about it, too. As great as Job was, and as great an example as he was, in the big picture of things, as good as he was, he could be better. And this challenge enabled him to go just another notch higher. So after this, if this were to happen again, if Satan were to have free reign again, do you think he would ask God to explain to him why?
No, no. I think he would.
Because God, in the end, Job's in a better position. As blessed as Job was, and as good example as Job was, in the end, he's even better off than he started. His material wealth is returned. His family's essentially returned. He has a new family. He doesn't get it back from the dead, obviously. But in the end, his faith is even stronger than it was at the beginning. So in the end, it actually, as much as we think about Job being cursed, in the end, he was blessed in a way that even material blessings could never bless him. He was even stronger in his faith at the end. As strong as his faith was through this ordeal, he was even stronger. And that, again, is another lesson to really think about is, you know, why did all this happen? Well, one possibility is a man of incredible faith that we all celebrate could himself improve his faith just a bit more, if not a lot more, by this experience, this extraordinary experience that he had.
And it's hard to even imagine any and everyone's type of trials that they may be facing.
Yep.
But this is a good illustration and a good book to look to. Character as to, okay, trials will come, people will face them, mm-hmm. it's how we react to them, who we put our trust in,
yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
How we respond, where we get our strength from, who do we lean on, and
yeah,
who do we put our faith in, and ultimately we know that we need to put our faith in God.
Indeed. Well, we appreciate folks, I think a lot of folks will actually be listening to this to CD or audio later. As opposed to live, we are experimenting actually with posting videos since we these videos we can download them and then repost them to the website directly so that they're not tied directly to Facebook. You can just pull them up at any time. So if this video turns out good, we may post it as well. Hopefully, this has been a good lesson for folks. However, you are watching or listening to us, I hope it's been a great and productive hour. We have certainly enjoyed sitting and reading God's Word. I love doing that. In hindsight, I should have spoke less and read more. To be candid, because these are such powerful lessons, and I love these are some of my favorite verses. Literally, my favorite verses that go and read because it just because it does exactly what it's intended. It reminds me who God is, and it reminds me who I am, and I take comfort in that. I genuinely take comfort in knowing, wow, what an incredible God the universe has. Or what should I say, what the God has a universe, right? Put that in right perspective. And he's made himself known to us. And he cherished and values enough that we are made in his image, right? To whatever extent we are able to, obviously. And ultimately, as Christians, he surrendered his own son so that we could have that opportunity to overcome those differences in our imperfection so that we can be with him. It just blows my mind. It's genuinely mind-blowing. Any closing thoughts?
Well, that when you talk about bringing in Jesus, there is kind of some Jesus aspects you could see in the book of Job,
mm-hmm.
that he was despised, rejected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He suffered unjustly, and but he knew that there's part of the book, and I encourage you to look at. Job realized there was no arbiter or mediator between God and man, and that was a foreshadowing of what Jesus was to come.
Yeah, he asked that question: who's the mediator? Who mediates between us and God? I mean, how can we be mediated here? You know, if I got something against God, what do I do? Right?
Yeah. So
that's a good illusion. Yeah,
that there is one today. We do have a mediator, and so there is a foreshadowing there. Mm-hmm. And but he also does say later in one of the verses, I believe it's in chapter 19, he does recognize that my Redeemer lives, and so he does know that there is hope.
Indeed. All right. Well, we appreciate everybody joining us by whatever means you have, and all have a great day. At this point, we still fit on a CD, so we might want to wrap it up.
All right.
All right. Thank you all. Take care, everyone. Thank you.